ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily. We are into round 19 of the AFL Premiership season, and it's all begun down here at the Cattery. Still in the broadcast box here at Cadinia Park on the back of the Cats' 27-point win to start the round over St Kilda. They scored the first 26 points of the night and were never headed. They led by as many as 47 on a couple of occasions in the final term. Just an injury to Max Holmes to sour the night. Corbin Middlemass alongside Ben Cameron. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. You might be still in the commentary box. I've just got back to the commentary box. And if I sound puffed,
yeah,
it's because I've just worked my way up 15 flights of stairs doing farmer's carries with two 20-kilo equipments up the stairs.
You've earned the soft serve on the way home?
I have. Well, at least some of it. Probably a couple of mouthfuls.
Adam Ramanaskis is here, the youngest Essendon Premiership player on planet Earth. Hello, Ram.
Hello, Corb. Yes, sir. Well, Ben, it's fair to say you did need it, so you'll be fine now. So you can relax on the way home, enjoy the drive home, and have that little caramel soft serve that you've been talking about all night.
I told you about it earlier, yes, and you said you'll blow out soon, and I said soon.
It was a pretty professional win for the Cats. What we do on a Thursday night is we look at the three big things out of the game. The first of our big things, I don't mean to emphasise this moment, and I don't want to put it all at the feet of one man.
Hard not to, though.
But it was an enormous turning point in the night, and unfortunately, it's St Kilda's number 43, Cooper Sharman. So he had the ball on the half-forward flank. He was about 40 metres out, and he decided to have a ping at an unguarded goal square. There was no one within a 10, 15-metre radius of him. He could have run the ball all the way to the goal line. He had a shot, skid across the face, missed. And had he kicked that goal, they would have been within 11 points halfway through the third quarter, having kicked the last four. Not only did he miss, Geelong quite literally scored from the kickout. They went end-to-end, Dangerfield goal, and they ended up kicking, six of the next seven goals, and the game was done.
So that was at the 14-minute mark of the third quarter there. Huge so moment. He misses that goal, tries to skid it, goes up the other end, but the problem was, so it wasn't one goal. It was 4 minutes later and there was another goal.
Yep.
And they were just completely deflated. You could see St Kilda. The body language was really lacking from that moment. The Cats blew the game right out from that point on, Benny.
Sadly, he's becoming a little bit of that kind of player, Cooper Sharman. He's the kind of guy who is chocolate or boiled lollies. Like, he can take a massive pack mark, 15 out directly in front, go back and miss it, and you go, oh, nearly, or get hands to a lot of marks, not take them. So he's a bit of a nearly player at the moment.
Second of our big three things, the 20-year-old debutant, Jay Polkinghorne. 8 marks, 6 shots at goal, 2 goals, 3.
Yep.
He joined the elusive club of guys with the first kick, first goal, and he did that tonight.
Well, the 2 goals, 3 wasn't what impressed me. It was the 8 marks. I reckon 6 of them were inside forward 50. So incredible work rate. He had Cal Wilkie as an opponent for a lot of the night. And he engaged him in terms of the physical contest when the ball was in the air.
And won proper one-on-ones against him.
He did.
Which is what James Kelly told us pre-game. I asked James Kelly, who is he as a player? And he said, look, he looks a bit ungainly. You sort of don't expect him to mark it, and then he'll mark it. Yep. And he did that against Cal Wilkie, who no one outmarked. No. Good signs.
You've got to remember, so Jeremy Cameron's out for the next 4 to 6. So they had to find another forward. They couldn't just go with Shannon Neal and Ollie Henry and then Paddy Dangerfield. They needed another marking target, and I think they've found one.
And the biggest of our three things out of tonight is clearly the fallout when it comes to Max Holmes. So if you looked at Geelong's best players, whether it's their top two, whether it's two of their top three, two of their top four, you would say it's Jeremy Cameron and it's Max Holmes and maybe Tom Stewart, Bailey Smith. But to lose two of them in back-to-back weeks, and the early indication is that Max Holmes, they've got syndesmosis fears. You were down there in the rooms post-game, Ben. The one guy we're not talking about is Sean Manor, who also hurt his hamstring on the run, but the Holmes injury is significant.
Yeah, so there was, I think, some television footage which seemed to suggest, if you were lip reading, he said it's broken. Like you said, that was when he initially came off the ground, I believe. I only had that relayed to me that he'd uttered those words, but I think syndesmosis or broken, the former is probably the better result. Like, Syndesmosis would be much better than Broken here. That might mean he can get back for the back end of the year.
He's also thought he snapped his hammy three times this year as well. So it might be just a rolled ankle. So you never know. Look, we hope for the best because he's clearly one of their prime movers. And we want to see players like Max Holmes in the run to the finals and playing in a final series.
I saw his mum, Lee Naylor, down in the rooms just as I was collecting the gear, getting ready for my farmer's carries back to the box. And I just said, oh, fingers crossed. And she said, yeah, fingers crossed. Hopefully he's all right. So that was all Lee had to say.
So if Manor doesn't play, he's got the hamstring tightness, Jeremy Cameron's still going to be out, and Max Holmes misses. Who starts favourite next Friday night when the Cats go to Melbourne to play the D's at the MCG?
I think the D's.
Wow.
Yeah, I do. And look, you got to look at the D's form line at the MCG as well. They've been untouchable there. So I'm a firm believer there's a critical mass of good players that each team can have out. And I think it's at that number now with the Cats.
Just on Geelong, 6-0 off 5-day break since the start of 2023.
And while we're on numbers, St Kilda 0-9 against top 9 teams.
Yeah.
So they're 10th, haven't beaten any of the 9 teams above them. That says everything you need to know about.
Ladder don't lie sometimes.
It's just the ladder don't lie. That's where they're at. To Friday night footy, let's get into the rest of the weekend. Our key question coming out of this game, Ben, centres around.
We were going to talk about Taylor Walker, Corbin. That was going to be our key question, but he is managed. So the key question, Rama, is could this match decide second place on the ladder?
Look, it could. And I think both teams are in good form at the moment. Adelaide have certainly found their mojo over the last 4 to 6 weeks. Sydney is going well. Looks like Charlie Curnow is fitting in. You know, he's leading the Coleman medal, but you would have said a couple of weeks ago, he's still not playing to his best, but he's now, he's now kicking goals on a regular occurrence again. Look, the thing with Sydney, it's quite interesting because I think they caught a lot of the competition by surprise with this forward handball. Now a lot of teams have cottoned on to what they're trying to do. So it's, okay, can they continue to do that, or do they have to go and find another trick now?
Mm. Oh, I still think even if Sydney drop this game, they'll finish second. So I know I asked the question, but
okay.
I still think even if they drop it, they've got a GWS, St Kilda, Port Adelaide, Essendon and North Melbourne. Yeah, like they should win their last three.
Yep.
They could easily win the next two, even if they drop this one. So I think Sydney will still finish.
What's Adelaide's run?
Adelaide have Collingwood, Essendon, Richmond, Freo and GWS.
Collingwood, yep.
So it'll be close, but yeah. I still think Sydney will be good enough to finish.
The Crows season is eerily similar to last year in terms of, so at the midway point, come home with a wet sail. It feels a lot like their season of 2025. Just last word on this game before we move on. This was Dean Cox's reflection after their loss to Fremantle. He's made 4 unforced changes, so in a bounce-back spot here, the Swans.
Second half, we were beaten convincingly. I think, by a really good team, go minus 28 in the contest. They tackle it 81 and 89% for each quarter in the last half, and we got 50%. They were harder for longer, and to their credit, that's why it was a 40-point loss.
All right, the other South Australian team, Port Adelaide, they're on Saturday afternoon against the Dockers. The question around this game, Ben, centres around Josh Carr.
Yeah, so is he trying to model his Port Adelaide build on Fremantle? And the reason I asked this, Rama, and you asked him about this on AFL Saturday, Corbin, is that they are the third best defence in the competition. Fremantle, Adelaide, Port Adelaide. Build it from the back.
Yeah, and I've spoken about this a lot with Fremantle around when Justin Longmuir first started as coach of Fremantle, his identity instantly was defence. And people were talking about, oh, they're boring to watch. They can't score. They can't do this. They can't do that. But what I look at now Fremantle are on top of the ladder and they're, almost a runaway juggernaut. Every time the games get tight right now, they reference back to defense. And I think that's such a great basis of any team to have, particularly really good teams. So if that's what Josh Carr is building, in my opinion, that's absolutely the right way. So I look at it and I look at Josh. Like you sort of, as a coach, you'll always be reflected as how you sort of played a little bit. And Josh Carr was just dogged and dour. He was a tagger. He was a really, really tough opponent. So I think that's what he wants a little bit of the identity of Port Adelaide to be.
I always say that teams come to reflect
Yeah.
Not only what their coach valued as a player, so card, defence, but also, you know, Hawthorn, smart, cerebral like Sam Mitchell.
Yep.
But also the disposition and personality of their senior coach as well, don't they? So we've seen that with Freo, very process-driven, which is what Justin Longmuir is like. But yeah, I mean, that's a good point about how dogged, determined and defensively minded Josh Carr was, and we're seeing that in his Port Adelaide team.
So big out to Port, clearly, obviously no Georgiades with concussion, no Butters, clearly for the back end of the year, having had surgery on his ankle. Should he give Port Adelaide a heads up? There's six games to go. He's clearly not on the park at the moment. Is it time that Zach gives Port Adelaide a little inkling as to what he's doing next year?
Well, maybe. But I'd love to see him play again. Now, we spoke about that earlier in the week on Monday, I think, didn't we, Corb?
Yep.
So, look, hopefully he can get back. But, look, I tend to think Port Adelaide would have some sort of idea by now. Like, in my experience of what I was as a player manager in the past.
Like, if they haven't told you by now, it's a pretty good indication as well,
isn't
it?
Yeah, but you're always giving the indication to either the list manager or the GM of football. Look, it's probably looking down this path. He hasn't totally made his mind up
so
yet.
So you as a manager are giving that indication, not the player?
Yep.
So you're saying, look, I think it's probably likely that he wants to go back.
Yeah, you don't want to answer the question, but it's sort of like, well, be prepared for it because this is, I feel like this is the direction it may be going.
And you've got to maintain your relationship with the club and you've got to deal with them.
You have to.
Yeah. That's interesting insight, I think. Like, even he might not have made his final decision, but they would have probably a fair idea that.
Because you've got to give the club that the player is leaving from a chance to go and find another player. You know, now all of a sudden, if Zach Butters does decide to leave Port Adelaide, there's probably $1.5 million in their cap.
Is there a chance that he has already told them?
Possibly.
Did that happen in your experience?
Like
we might not know about it in the media, but a player tells a club.
I get the sense he hasn't told them.
So do I, but...
No.
So generally we'll hold out until the end of the
year. It's generally like, you know, you have your exit interview and then you may tell the coach, look, can I just have the exit interview with you? Because you want to tell the coach or you have your line coach in there with that player and you go from there.
It's hard to think what would be the incentive of waiting at this point if he's Zach Butters. Like if he was going to stay.
Yeah.
That's
brings new meaning to exit interview, doesn't it? Also, Kyle Watson-Wheeler was on with you on Monday morning, Corb, just quickly. And like she said, look, I haven't caught up with Zach. I've also had no indication that he's going to come here. People say, oh, well, what else is she going to say? She didn't have to add the part that I've had no indication that he's going to come to us. So.
Okay. But at the same time, I've never been in a presentation from a club that wants a player and the president is in the pitch.
No, of course.
Now, the president will know in the background.
Yeah.
So I think the second comment is probably more relevant.
Even when you marry that up with the quotes from Luke Beveridge.
You're on fire today. This is Brett Delidio, who usually does this particular show.
If he's pointing at his watch.
He's hot on you about one more thing. I think on this game alone, you've had about five more things.
Rammer and I just vibe. Yeah, we've got things to say to one another.
Yeah. I've been waiting to get this line out. Freo have won their last three at Adelaide Oval by a combined margin of 14 points. Mm. So all three games by less than a goal. They beat the Power last year by 6 points. Alex Pierce kicked the winning goal. They beat the Crows by 2 points. Alex Pierce laid the big smother. And then a game which we were at earlier in the year, they beat Collingwood by 6 points in gather round at Adelaide Oval on the Friday night in the wet. So
what's the start for Port Adelaide this week? Do we know that?
The head start?
Yeah.
We do. For some reason, it's not on.
We do. It is 47 and a half points.
There we go.
47. Ooh, I reckon that's pretty fair.
There's a lot out for Port Adelaide. All right, let's get on to the next game. North Melbourne and Melbourne at Docklands. This is in the twilight fixture on Saturday. And the question here centres around Jacob Van Rooyen. Is he this season's most improved player?
Yeah, he'd be close because he had an ordinary year last year.
And 16 goals from 16 games last year.
We're expecting big things from him last year. But this is the thing. It's a bit of a new lease on life. Now, the thing with Van Rooyen is he always had the enthusiasm and the strut and the presence as a key forward. It was just simply when it was going to come together. Now, it's starting to come together more consistently, I think, Benny.
Oh, I think a part of that as well is that they move the ball quicker.
Yeah.
Like any leading key forward wants the ball coming in quickly. Like they were slow, long down the line, kick to a contest, reset, kick to the pocket, see if we can get it out of bounds, throw in. Like, of course, he's going to play better when they're going quicker. It's getting in there to him faster. And he's going at 35 goals from 17 games, so more than two a game this year. I've seen the same thing in Jai Amos-Ram.
Yeah.
who really struggled at Fremantle. He's kicked 39 from 17. So, this year they've gone faster.
So I'll ask you both the question. You obviously watch so much football. Do you think then the problem simply with Melbourne's midfield forward connection under Simon Goodwin was just speed of ball? Was that what it was in the end, simply?
I think so.
Yeah.
So I think
because that's effectively what you're saying.
I think there was a really telling quote from James Hurd last year on, I think, one of the Nine shows, where he basically said, look, I work with Simon Goodwin at Essendon for a long period of time, and his belief was basically that you have to defend in the way that you attack. Yeah. He's very risk-averse in the way that he wants to move the ball.
You're surgical.
And we saw it over and over and over again, and that's his philosophy. So we saw that in the mid-forward connection.
And guys like Turner and Lever have had really good years. Yeah.
Can I throw something to you guys?
Yep.
What has GWS's forward connection been like this year?
Up and down.
Is there a correlation there somewhere?
There probably is, and I'm probably missing it.
Yeah, I'm missing it too.
Clayton Oliver.
Right.
Yeah.
So okay. Clayton Oliver's leading the competition in disposals.
Yeah.
Now, terrific player.
Yeah.
But he's not Clayton Oliver's not a great kick.
Yeah, not a great user going inside 50.
No.
Yeah.
It's hard though, isn't it, when you've had ultimate success at a place to basically go, oh, we're going to risk giving up what made us great in those particular years and Lever and May behind the ball. Whereas when a new coach comes in, he's got a... Yeah, new lease on life that they can free it up. The other thing I would say about Jacob Van Rooyen, by the way, I think he's been a huge benefactor of Brody Mychek coming in. So I feel like as a senior guy that can lead the forward line and give them a bit more instruction, and his game's obviously held up since he's gone out. But he's also been a bit rocks and diamonds, Jacob Van Rooyen. So you look at his season this year, he's kicked 6 against the Saints, 6 against the Tigers, 5 against the Eagles, 5 against the Hawks. That's 22 of his goals, basically, in 4 games. He's been goalless 6 times, and he's kicked only 1 goal on 3 occasions. Yeah. So he's basically had 9 games where he's been relatively quiet, and he's had 4 that he's dominated.
But that can happen with young key forwards, can't it?
Yeah.
So
just quickly, before we change games, just on North Melbourne, it's obviously Melbourne this week, and then St Kilda at the Docklands. My belief is they have to win these next 2 to be any chance in the wild card, because their last 4 is Hawthorn, Western Bulldogs, Geelong, Sydney.
Yeah, who they've lost 7 or more games against in a row.
So it's these next 2 weeks are must win.
Do we need a most improved award, Rammer?
I would love an award, not necessarily most improved. I would love, we've got the Colwyn medal for the forward. We've got the Brownlow medal, which is...
The midfielder.
Which has morphed into a midfielder's medal. So maybe a defensive player of the year, something like that. Call it whoever you want, whoever's been the best... Call it the Bruce Dool medal. I don't know. Call it whatever you want. So
the Steve Silvani medal or something like that. Yeah.
But I think we need to start recognizing defenders. I do like the idea of most improved. But what it would do, it would make Brownlow medal night a hell of a lot more exciting.
Mm. Yeah. I'm not even sure, by the way, Jacob Van Rooyen wins the most improved award at Melbourne.
Ooh, who have you got? Harry Sharp or someone?
Cade Chandler. There's a bunch of guys
there. Tom Sparrow's having a standout. Yeah.
Tom Sparrow's been outstanding.
He was pretty good last year, though. Tom.
Daniel Turner's been excellent. Yeah. Harvey Langford. There's all these guys that are had excellent years.
Which is always a good sign of a good coach, isn't it? Like, he's come in and everyone's got better. Yeah. Well done, Stephen King.
All right, the next of our games, off to the Saturday night fixture. It's a pretty big one at that, too. Clean, old-fashioned hate. Collingwood up against Carlton. Are the retro jumpers going to be a clash? I don't know if you've caught up with this, but both teams are essentially going to wear a retro jumper this weekend. First of all, the Carlton Football Club are wearing a jumper from 100 years ago. Now, it's not a woolen jumper, by the way. It's the modern remake, but 1926 Heritage Guernsey. 100 years on, it's got the collared neck, so predominantly navy. It's won a fan vote earlier in the year and got the scrolled CFC monogram on it. While Collingwood are going to wear the jumper from the late 90s, which is the Collingwood Shield. If you remember that, it's predominantly black with the white stripes and it's got the Collingwood logo in the centre of the jumper. Are we in danger, Ben, of having a clash on Saturday night?
Oh, I think we are. Like, they can clash a little bit, these two clubs, but predominantly dark against predominantly dark, I think it'll be a little bit of a clash. And white is the only other colour.
I don't get too annoyed with the jumpers because playing, I never really... had an issue with it. So I was never really a guy that, oh, geez, I can't tell. We played Richmond.
Yeah.
Never had an issue.
Never had an issue. that I can remember.
Apparently part of the agreement, I looked into this a few years ago when there was a bit of a mix-up and Carlton wore the white shorts and Collingwood wore the black shorts. Apparently when Eddie Maguire was there as president, they struck an agreement that basically when Collingwood plays Carlton, Collingwood will always wear the white shorts and Carlton will always wear the dark shorts.
Navy blue. Yep.
Which they're going to do again this week.
Makes
so
sense.
Carlton will be predominantly dark and hopefully with the white involved, Collingwood will wear will be at least lighter.
Yep.
To be able to mix it in. Do we need a retro round? Do we bring that back? Or I know you would have played in a few heritage rounds back in the game.
Look,
back in the day.
I do like it, but I think if it's a retro round, it's got to be against a retro rival.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Also, this is a big game. Like we've been, just to repeat ourselves, talking about Collingwood as the gatekeeper to the wildcard positions. Like if you beat them, you're good enough. If you don't, you're not. It might prove as such for Carlton again this weekend, maybe like it did for North last week.
This has been a team that haven't been able to get past either. So the Pies have won the last 5 against Carlton and 8 of the last 9. And interestingly, out of those 8 wins, 5 of them have been by a goal or less. So Collingwood would have had it over Carlton in these close finishes, including, if you remember, the round 6 game earlier this year, Taylor Byrne had the shot after the siren that missed. It was also the Elijah Hollands night, the last time that these two teams played back in round 6. So they'll go at it again Saturday night at the G. Sunday footy.
Yeah, the West Coast Eagles taking on the Brisbane Lions in Perth. This is still Saturday night, I think, in fact, Corb.
I think you might be
right. Yeah, this is Saturday night out west.
I'm ahead of myself.
Yep, too keen. Is Willem Dersme your rising star winner?
No, he's not a lock for me yet. I still think that field is there. I've loved Harry Dean.
Me too.
I think to hold down a key position as he has, and he hasn't had Jacob Wiedering around for a lot this year. I think what he's done is incredible. You know, Jagger Smith's had his moments. Roby's had his moments. Who am I missing? Give me
maybe Cooper Trembath.
Yep, I think he's done a terrific job in North forward line there. So I don't think it's a lock yet.
Ty Gallop.
I think it probably is just Willem, but I've spoken about the fact that I believe Harry Dean's had the best key defensive first year since Ben Hart in 1992. Yeah. I'm talking about a kid who's come.
So how isn't he then your favourite? Ben Hart was an all Australian.
He was all Australian. I know, which is incredible, right? Ben Hart was the first person to be all Australian twice before 20.
Yeah.
Harry Dean's, I think, been the best since then. I did have some people on Twitter try to challenge me about whether Ben Hart played key position in his first year. He definitely did. He sort of changed as he got older and played less key. But I messaged Ben himself. Mm-hmm. I messaged Graham Studley Corn. He's Studley Corns. He said, yes, he did.
Yeah.
Sorry, Studley didn't get back to me. Ben Hart said he did.
Get the story right, Ben. Come on.
I'm lost in all the names. I'm lost in all the names.
But I also went back and watched footage from 1992 of Ben Hart playing on those big monsters like Dunstall and Lockett and co. So he definitely did play fullback, and that's the comp to Harry Dean.
Do you know, I've said this before, what helps is a really good campaign.
Yeah.
And Perth and the WA media, that they build a campaign for their guys like no one else. So they've had great success over the years. Hazelby, Palmer, Sarong, Reid, Cousins, all rising star winners.
Jeez.
Disproportionately out of WA, so I think that's in Willem Dersme's favour.
Who came second to Paul Hazelby?
Was that you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You come second to Hayes.
I did.
That's deflating.
Speaking of second, who's the second best team in it right now?
I think on form right now, I think probably Brisbane.
I'm with you.
So if Brisbane played Fremantle tomorrow at the MCG, who would you take?
Ooh, exposed form's always good form.
I'd probably still take Brisbane. Just on
look, I've tipped Fremantle all year, so I've got to stay there.
Yeah.
I've got to stay there.
I'll tell you what, I'm now firmly in the category that no one's keeping Fremantle out of a grand final. You got to beat them twice or at least once in Perth to stop them getting to a grand final.
Yeah.
I just can't see that happening. So I feel like Freo will get there on one side of the bracket. I feel like Brisbane's the team they probably wouldn't want to see
on grand final day, just with their experience of being there.
Yep,
3 times already.
Is it time? Sunday footy?
Yeah, Sunday footy.
Let's get into it. Richmond and Hawthorn. Is Adam Uzay escaping too much criticism?
It's a tough one because they've had a number of injuries this year. So it's hard to really then judge, I guess, the improvement of those young players and a lot of high draft picks there. I think ideally Richmond would want to be more advanced. But at the same time, you look at the Essendon example with Brad Scott, and it might be getting to that point where they are asking the question. So, you know, they'll have another a good draft hand again this year. But, yeah, I would think without the injuries, And I'll put the caveat on that,
yep.
is that they would want to be a little bit further ahead.
I've been following this stat closely. The nine kids that they drafted inside the top 30 in the last two drafts, they have played 41.9% of available games.
That's what I'm getting.
Mm. So it's what I feel like these years, or this time that we're talking about now and last year, yep. will catch up with Adamuzi eventually. And it feels like everyone's giving him a grace period at the moment, but they did the same with Brad Scott late last year. They gave him a grace period, but ultimately...
extended a contract, yeah.
It catches up with you in the long run. And I worry for Adamuzi what it's going to mean next year and the year after, because if you've only put 41% into those games, at some point, those kids are going to have to get games into them.
See, the fear of it is with any coach that's coaching a developing team...
Graveyard shift.
Is graveyard shift, absolutely. But... the performance factor will come into it at some stage.
Yep.
And it's sort of like, well, when people start to run out of patience, the easiest part, oh, but you haven't got the success. And then, but the coach then turns around and says, hang on a minute.
Yep.
You said to me it was all about developing these players. And I've had these kids that you talk about, the top 30 picks in the last two drafts, for 40% of the time.
Yeah.
So what is it?
Correct. And that's not his fault.
No.
That they haven't been on
well,
the park.
Well, they released their high performance manager during the week or last week.
I was worried when he went in that it was a graveyard shift.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And it might just turn out to be. I hope not for Adam.
But it's always the risk. You know, you talk to any Richmond fan, do you take the premierships?
Correct.
Yeah.
What do you
of course you would.
But it was
would.
But it was always going to turn that way because they weren't adjusting on the fly.
Correct. As an Essendon fan, definitely. You think
100%.
It's Essendon are there anyway, and they didn't have the premierships. Yeah. Just on the Hawks, by the way, so here's one that might have crept up on people. They're 18th, as in dead last in the competition, for defensive 50 to inside 50 the last 4 weeks. They're moving the ball 15% of the time. The best teams in the comp are moving it currently at 33%. So they're worse than Essendon in that particular stage. So they've been young in recent weeks. They're bottom six for age. So
last week, they were playing in the swamp.
They've had guys, but they still they scored freely there.
Yeah.
Interest,
but that doesn't also tell you about the speed of ball movement.
Yeah. Only side with three debutants during that particular stretch too. So it is just a weird little 4 weeks in their season where availability's been an issue and starting to get a little look at the underbelly there.
What's the best ability, Ben?
It's always availability, Rama. Yes.
Yeah. All right, Suns, Dogs, fascinating game this one, obviously, given that the comments from Damien Hardwick last week were essentially raised to the white flag. Clearly, the club was pretty keen to try and walk back those comments as best they can. But, gee, it raises the question, has Dimmer lost his magic?
No. No, I don't think so. I think he's a student of Kevin Sheedy, and I think Sheeds has played that card a lot in his coaching career. So this will be more a test to his players to see who wants to stand up and who wants to fight, because their season's not over.
So that's interesting, because you said that on Monday. You said, look, he's saying that to see who really wants to play and who wants to still dig in.
And
you're saying that was a Sheedy trick.
No doubt. That was always a Sheedy trick. So he would make comments in press conferences to make sure players heard them.
Mm.
And us as players, we would talk about it. And... It was simply, guys, who's standing up here? Stand up and fight. And that's what Dimmer's doing, because clearly there's clubs coming for his players at all different angles, which is understandable because the list is really strong. But the season's still alive.
This is clearly a different gig than what he thought he was walking into, isn't it? Like when he went up there...
In what way?
Yeah.
Well, he said when he got the job, 80% of the premiership teams here, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden it's... This feels like a
reset,
culturally significant time in the history of the footy club. That it's almost they're at the point again where they got to sit down at the end of the year and say, hey, if you want to go, if you want to stay, you're in, and then we work out what we got left and we go again.
You lose cultural players. So Freireni was very good cultural player. Ainsworth, very good cultural player. So don't understate that. You will say, they're role players. Absolutely they are. But from Monday to Friday, those players are critical in your locker room.
I also saw a video of Sheeds addressing the GWS Giants in their early days on social media during the week. Did he always talk with random capitalization, like strange emphasis? Like he's like, if it's on the ground, you got to go in the air, and then you got to go hard.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
A reaction. You got to react. You've reacted to it.
See, I've remembered it. Yeah, I was ready to run through a brick wall.
There you
Sheeds.
Go. That's the idea. That's the art of coaching.
Yeah,
then.
Correct. One other video that bobbed up during the week was that of Jamara Ugal-Hagan and Mac Andrew. So Jamara's meant to be playing against his old team for the first time. He's clearly not going to do that this weekend.
The optics of it are just horrible.
Yeah.
So it's either don't talk about it or come out and explain it.
Yep. And they've essentially denied any wrongdoing, and that's where it sits at the moment.
Yeah. It just looks ordinary.
By the way, what does all this mean for the Western Bulldogs? So they're the team in the other corner on Sunday. I put that to Bob Murphy on right here on ABC AFL Daily on Tuesday, and here's what Bob had to say about it from the Dogs' perspective.
I'm not inside the four walls, but I can easily imagine Luke Beveridge standing in front of them saying, and actually playing it and saying, yep, that is garbage. If you think that's what we're about to see on the weekend, don't bother showing up because it'll be at the other end.
So it should be a game they just roll up there and win. Everyone's beating the Suns at the moment, and all of a sudden it's a little tricky game for the Dogs just to see which version of the Suns they get after that.
You look at the Dogs run home, so Gold Coast this week, so you'd say they're going to start favourite. Richmond next week, they'll start favourite. Fremantle over there, no. Then I reckon they've got three 50-50 games on the run home, North Melbourne, Carlton and Melbourne.
Mm.
So these next two are critical for their hopes as well.
Who are you tipping?
It's hard to tip Gold Coast at the moment, so I'm happy with the Dogs.
All right, the Dons to round out the weekend. They're in the Sunday twilight shift up against the GWS Giants. It is the annual challenge game. Rama, this obviously was a game that launched, given your cancer battle, and the club obviously still wears the yellow armband one game a year in support of Challenge, which is a children's charity supporting kids that are battling cancer. It's something that the club does so incredibly well, and we've seen pictures again this week of the involvement between the young kids and the Essendon Football Club. I know you're still involved in this particular initiative. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, I'm very much in the background now, which I quite enjoy. So these kids come into the club. They've been around the club now for the past 2 weeks. And to see, I think, the playing group and how they've embraced these kids and understand the importance of what these kids are going through and just these moments over the past couple of weeks, how important it is to one, their ongoing treatment and how they're going with it, but also their recovery. Mm. So some of these kids, it will be the absolute highlight of their year, their life, walking out with the players on Sunday. And I'm wrapped. It's gone down that path. You would never wish any kid to have cancer. Oh. You want every kid to just have a normal childhood where they go and play sport and enjoy themselves. So I'm incredibly proud of the legacy that I've left with it.
Yeah.
But also what it's grown into now, and I think it's going to continue to grow.
As you should be. You should be, Rama.
Absolutely.
It's a great legacy to leave. And, when we spoke to you a couple of years ago at Gather Round about your battle with cancer, it was deeply emotional to learn how full on all of that was. It's a hard segue moving on from that to the here and now with the Essendon Football Club. Yeah. But
so here's a game of footy with a ball with air in it that doesn't really matter.
Yeah. But are the senior figures at Essendon just warming to the idea of James Hird?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I think they need to be warming to obviously performing as well for the remaining six games of the year. So, and that's the hard part. You've got this incredibly youthful list at the moment that are looking for real guidance. Now, I get it. It's been a hard time. It's been a rough time for the football club. But every game you get, that is an opportunity to perform.
You were at an Essendon function earlier today, Rama, and James Hird was there speaking on stage.
Yeah.
I imagine the coverage of that from the outside. Oh, Hurdy was there rallying support and everything else. What happened?
Well, it was the absolute complete opposite. It was a Dick Reynolds Club function, and it was Hurdy was talking about his career and the significant moments that he had. There wasn't, incredibly, one question about the coaching side of things. So I think everyone was sort of sitting there on the edge of their seat waiting, and no questions came. And I actually quite enjoyed it because for the first time you've gone to a function and the attention hasn't been there. It's actually been on what the actual event is about.
Hurdy did sign off by saying, look, and there's more to come. There's more to be written. And the room got up and stood and applauded.
That's untrue.
A standing ovation.
That's untrue.
But none of that happened.
But look, they've got to show up, I think, this week. And talking to Dean Solomon during the week, he is trying absolutely everything. And it's just hard. It's tough going at the moment, but they've got to start well. They can't have starts as they've had in the recent couple of weeks, and the game's over at quarter time.
They're going to have pretty good motivation, as we talked about off the top in this game, with obviously everything that what it means to the footy club, the challenge game. So good luck to the Bombers and to everyone involved in that initiative. Interestingly, the Giants' best footy has actually come against the best this year. They're 5-2 against the top seven. They're 3-7 against the bottom 11.
So the Giants, you look at their run home again, and Like, they've got Essendon, so they'll start heavy favourite there. Sydney, probably not. Port Adelaide, they should start favourite there, I'd say. Gold Coast in Canberra, so they'll start favourite there. West Coast, start favourite there. Then Adelaide's a tough one at the end. So their wild card hopes are still well and truly alive.
A bit of Superdog to finish.
Let's do it.
I've got Brett Deledio's tip through. We'll look for Rammer's.
He can still
find his way through this. All right, here we go. Adelaide, 11.5-point head start against the Swans. Mm. The Power getting 47.5 against the Dockers. North, 14.5 points against the D's. The Blues, only 6.5 points against Collingwood, so that falls into our sub-10-point category, as does the Bulldogs game against the Suns. The Bulldogs only a 2.5-point underdog there. Carlton, by the way, sorry, a 6.5-point underdog. West Coast, 44.5-point head start against the Lions. The Tigers are catching 50.5 points against the Hawks, and the Bombers with 39.5 against the Giants. So some big numbers in a few of these spreads this weekend.
No good options either, really.
No one got any points last week, so no covers from the three of us. No change to the leaderboard. Corbin 115, Ben 105, Lids 75. Lids' pick is the Crows.
Yeah, that's where I would have gone.
11.5 points against the Swans. Do you have one for us, Ram?
Yeah, I'll take North Melbourne at the Docklands.
Okay.
14.5.
All right, I'll follow Rammer in on that one.
14.5 points.
Don't let me
well, it's a bit right. like you, it's a bit of Jekyll and Hyde with Melbourne when they're away from the MCG. So let's see if North Melbourne, because they play. I thought they played incredibly well last week against Collingwood.
Mm.
Just couldn't get it done at the finish there.
There's not a lot of good options, is there, this weekend?
No.
I might go for the Power with 47.5. Really depleted, undermanned team playing the Dockers away from home. It sort of feels like it could go the other way, but. I'm tipping a plucky Port Adelaide team to at least defensively give us a run for our money. I don't think they'll beat the Dockers, but they might keep it within 8 goals. All right, good hit out, Ram. Safe travels back up the highway.
Well done.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Corbin.
Thanks to Jules Hay back in the studio and to Stuart Hollywood Baker for sticking around late with us here tonight as well. We are done here on ABC AFL Daily, the home of your footy conversation, of course, 5 episodes a week. We'll be back on AFL Saturday. Hope you can catch us then.